So welcome to the fourth edition of the Women Talk Sports podcast for the month of November. We have a pretty good full lineup of topics today, including Lindsey Vonn not being allowed to race with boys, or men, excuse me, and some other great topics. We also have Anne Gaffigan with us today. She'll be talking to us a little bit about MMA. So we're very excited to get going.
Woo!
Just to let you know, if you don't know, I am Kara Hawkins. I am the social media editor for Women Talk Sports. You can pretty much find me online all the time, either at Women Talk Sports or at Kara Bird. And my co-host today is Stephanie, as usual.
Yes, I'm the communication resource manager at Women Talk Sports. And we brought Anne on for this segment to talk about all of these topics, but specifically MMA, because she is our MMA go-to woman. So, Anne, why don't you tell us about yourself?
Okay, I will, as soon as this video that just came onto my computer will stop playing. Awesome. Okay. Sorry about that.
There are technical difficulties all
the
time.
I'm a newbie to the podcast, you know? You knew what you were getting into when you invited me on. I am Anne Gaffigan, one of the co-founders of Women Talk Sports, as Stephanie said, and I'm excited to be invited on with these two awesome ladies that have been kicking some booty on this podcast thus far.
All right. So let's just jump in with the first topic then. And Kara kind of introduced it in the intro, but Lindsey Vonn was denied entrance into the World Cup downhill race by the International Ski Federation. So Sarah Lewis, who was the Secretary General of the FIS, said that it's called the Men's World Cup and the Ladies World Cup. The men race the Men's World Cup and the ladies race the Ladies World Cup. FIS and the World Cup points are not transferable from one circuit to another. So they clearly stated she was not going to be allowed to compete with the men.
I think this is a tough one. I mean, I think if they're trying to keep the sport pure and go by the rules and all of that, you know, good stuff, which can be good, then they have to do the stick by the decision that they made. Because one of the issues is the men's course is the course that the women are going to be competing on the next week, I believe.
Days later.
So, and I guess as it is right now, you're not supposed to be allowed to race the course beforehand. And so she would be given an advantage over the other female skiers. Okay. So, you know, by the book, I think they're making the right decision, but I think it would have been a good PR move to let her do it, bring some attention to the sport. I don't think, you know, I would be really surprised if the other female skiers threw a big fit about her being able to do that. Maybe they would. I don't know. But it certainly would have brought a lot of attention to the sport, and I think it would be really interesting to see how she could do against the men, because, you know, I think so often we just kind of take it for granted that men are better than women. But I think skiing is one of those sports where you say not necessarily, you know, because there's a lot of factors involved and it's not just brute strength. And I think, you know, it would have been really interesting. And it's kind of like, well, I mean, do you guys already have enough exposure? I'm sure they could use more exposure. You know, and I think they were just trying to go by the book.
Yeah, and I probably don't have a popular point of view on this one, but I think what they did was the right decision, only because if every woman would be allowed to participate in the men's, then I could see, like, if they were going to combine both of them all the time, then I say, okay, then we deal with that and look to see if that is good for us. But to give one person a special case on this, and I understand she's very talented and she probably could do very well in that competition, I just see that as kind of a tension point. Maybe some of the women who were competing in the women's competition wouldn't be upset about it, but I just think that it's kind of weird to just let one person do it and not the other. Or if they are going to let her, then just don't let her compete with the women so she doesn't have an advantage when she goes back 6 days later.
You know, that actually brings up a kind of an interesting point on my thought process, and it was something that one of our many fans on Facebook kind of brought forth, too, is why not in a sport like this combine both the men and women and have that as the ranking?
Right.
You know, constantly competing against each other and, you know, being to the point where you're not getting checked by another, you know, by a female would definitely motivate the men. And, you know, being able to beat the boys or the men is something that pretty much motivates women too. I think that could be maybe something they look at down the road, especially in a sport where it's not, there's not a clear cut definition of, you know, men and women, men typically being better per se.
Yeah. It would be kind of cool if in the next season or in sometime in the near future, if they would do like a test season where they did blend them and see like what happened. Don't make it permanent, but see what happens. I mean, because the one question is, although it is very technical, if they do have more strength and that makes gives them an advantage, then the hope of a woman ever winning would be zero. I mean, like, they would never win anything, which I have an issue with that because I think in their own, within, among women, you should be recognized if you are the most talented. So that's the only issue. But it would be kind of cool if they did do a test run with the blending of the men's and women's races.
Yeah.
At least one race.
Yeah, just do a few of them. And like you said, Steph, I think that's a good point about if you're going to let one, let them all.
Yeah.
Do a few of them. Let any of the women that want to do it, do it. And, like, let's see what happens. You know, it might be that you have an advantage if you're lighter, like a lot of the women are. I mean,
right.
Maybe their bodies are more dynamic when they crouch into a certain position. I have no clue, and we don't really know. And I think for someone like Vaughn to be as dominant as she is, it clearly shows the potential to be better is there, but it's so much harder to get better and as an individual and as an entire group if your standard is at a certain level and it's not getting pushed any higher. And the only way they're going to do that is to race against the men. One thing I saw too is that she does have the option to be what they call the forerunner, which means she can ski the course beforehand by herself, which they have people do to kind of test it out, which I'm a little confused as to why they're letting her do that when they said one of the reasons they're not letting her compete is it gives her an advantage over the other competitors because being a forerunner would give her that same advantage.
And but, they're just sending her down the way to like make sure all this stuff is safe, right?
Yeah, but she would still be timed the same.
Okay.
And it would be the same course. So if she decided to do that, we might at least be able to compare her
to
the men did. So it'll be interesting to see if she decides to do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. Maybe in 2014, it'll be a different story.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, should we start talking about MMA?
Let's do it.
All right. Anne is like the go-to woman. Kara and I haven't even spoken those three letters since the podcast started. So let's hear it from Anne.
You're in for a world of hurt. No, I'm kidding. Okay. So women's MMA is very, very interesting if you're interested in women's sports because MMA has been predominantly full of male athletes for a while. It's kind of a traditional male culture with the dudes in the cage trying to rip each other's head off and the women in bikinis carrying around the ring card saying what round it is. So that's kind of the stereotypical visual of MMA, but in fact there are a lot of women out there that fight and that are very good, really fun to watch. But of course they've had to struggle in terms of opportunity and cultural acceptance, etc. So there was a video as recently as a year or two ago of Dana White, the president of the UFC, which is the big MMA promotion. It's like the Olympics of MMA, let's put it that way, saying, being asked the question, Dana, when will women fight in the UFC? And he laughed and said, never, without even hesitating. And now here we are in November of 2012, and Dana has been quoted as saying there absolutely will be women in the UFC sometime soon.
Wow.
And it was very interesting this week how this news came out. So Ronda Rousey is currently the 135-pound Strikeforce champion. Strikeforce is probably the second biggest MMA promotion to UFC. They do have a women's division, unlike the UFC, and she is the champ of the 135-pound division. For whatever reason, her charisma, her dominance, her attitude, her looks, she's very, very popular. She's had crossover fame. She's on the cover of this week's Sports Illustrated. And she backs up her talk. She's very good at what she does. She's 6-0, I believe. Every win has come with a gruesome armbar. which basically means she practically breaks someone's arm off and ends the fight. So the news came out from TMZ that, yes, the gossip site, Ronda Rousey has officially joined the UFC, and TMZ also reported that Strikeforce will have its last fight show in January and then will cease operations. Now, there was no official comment from Dana White except for a smiley face on his Twitter account, which he has been to do when he's not allowed to say much more. And then when ESPN interviewed Ronda Rousey about it later that day or the next day via video, she kind of danced around the topic, and it very much looked like she was not supposed to talk about it or confirm anything. And yet all of these news outlets are reporting that Ronda Rousey has a What that means to me is that she's going to join UFC. They've invited her to, but her manager's arguing over how much money she's going to get paid.
Ooh.
She's arguing for a lot, because I think that she's going to bring a lot of attention to the UFC, and I think it's very interesting that their next biggest star could be a female.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All of these years of not having any women at all.
And it's only been a year since he said that they would never be in UFC, correct?
I think it's been a year. So, very interesting turn of events. The other interesting thing is, whenever they've been talking about women joining the UFC, they only talk about Ronda Rousey. Well, there has to be at least one other woman that's going
to... Otherwise, she can fight the air, I guess, and win every time.
I mean, unless they're going to have her fight the 135-pound dudes. I mean, I don't know.
You know. Maybe.
That would be quite the... They won't let skiers compete, but they'll let boxers just... Or UFC fighters. Go at it.
I would love to see how Middle America reacts to that. but, you know, so it'll be very interesting. I think that it's very exciting, but I'm also really cautious to just freak out about it because, you know, are they going to just capitalize on Rousey's star power and line up people to fight her and build her as a star, which she's certainly deserving, but if that's all they're going to do, it's not big progress for women in the UFC. You know, it'll be progress when a division gets built out, you know, in multiple weight classes, and they're paid as well as the men are paid, etc. So that is still to be seen. And you know, even who she's going to fight next and how much she's going to get paid is to be seen. Cool thing about MMA is after they have a show, they release how much everyone gets paid, so we'll know.
Oh, that's cool.
We'll know everybody's prize money, and that will be very interesting, I think. And, you know, the funny thing to me is if they have not signed anything yet, they've now said publicly, she's coming with us. So they put some pressure on themselves to take what she wants to be paid and pay her, because now they've told everybody it's going to happen.
Right.
Well, so what happens to Strikeforce?
That's a good question. Zuffa, which is the parent company of the UFC, bought Strikeforce several years ago. And it's my belief that they basically bought them because they were the closest thing to competition. So they bought them to kill them.
Okay.
They have bought them and ignored them ever since. And Strikeforce has struggled with selling tickets. They don't seem to spend much money or time promoting their fights. And their shows air on Showtime, which is TV, but not a lot of people get it. It's a premium channel. And shows get canceled a lot because of that, I think. So I think they kind of bought them to let all of the fighters' contracts expire and let Strikeforce's contract with Showtime expire, which happens in January. And then they're going to say, okay, see you later, Strikeforce. We'll take some of your fighters that we want, and the rest can, you know, fend for themselves, and we can remain the number one MMA promotion.
So technically, there could be a lot of women who are actually out of their job with fighting if UFC don't really pick up on this league.
And something interesting that's happened, though, in the past year is there has been a women's MMA promotion called Invicta, actually located right here in Kansas City. They've had 3 shows so far, their first one last April, and they actually have the most women signed to their division, and more so than Strikeforce. And they have very good women. They've focused on quality. They've done a very good job promoting their events. They've had some impressive number of views of their live stream of their events. They've done, Shannon Knapp is the president. She's done a very good job. And they've actually worked very well with Strikeforce in terms of, hey, you guys want so-and-so to fight so-and-so, we'll give you her, but you have to give us this person. You have to release her from her contract and let her fight with us. And I think it seems like the people involved have been of the attitude, hey, you know, these women need fights, and if we can't give them to them and someone else can, let's let them do that. Another interesting thing is it seems that Dana White has been very supportive of Invicta. So even though he said, oh, UFC is never going to have women, et cetera, when Invicta started, he would tweet about the fights. He left flowers for Shannon Knapp on the night of her first show. So it seems like they know each other and have a good relationship. And so there's some speculation out there that what may happen is UFC will buy up all of those fighters' contracts, and Invicta will get absorbed by UFC, or maybe UFC will split into, I have no idea, into men's and women's, and Invicta will become the women's UFC. I'm not sure, but they've been oddly supportive of each other.
So there's some things that are going to be happening in the near future, hopefully. Yeah.
I hope so. I think it's very possible. So it's going to be really interesting to watch that world.
But it's also positive to see that they're treating this as like a legitimate sports business, which it is. But the fact that they are doing all of this trading and setting up fights and taking different athletes in order to make fights happen, I always think that's a promising sign instead of, you know, just someone's working to make this stay alive and become popular, which is good.
I think the people that are involved at a high level are people that believe, or in Dana's case, are starting to believe that women are entertaining. Female fighters are entertaining. They're talented, and they can be marketed well. So which is true. It's just nice to have people finally recognize that. So
awesome. Anything else on tap for MMA?
That's the big stuff right now. Where all things are going.
Awesome. Well, it is pretty big stuff. There's also big stuff happening in women's soccer. They named the coach for the USA national team, and it is Tom, how do you say his name? Shirmani?
That sounds correct.
That's a really kick-ass last name, I gotta say. Tom Shirami. And he's from Australia. He was sent the Australian team to the last two World Cups, and he coached a bunch of Australian club teams throughout the year. So he was also an assistant coach, I believe, of the U.S. team in the early 2000s. So
I know there's been quite a bit of discussion, basically going from a women coach coaching a women's team to a men's coach coaching a women's team. And it seems to be kind of a split opinion on if this is going to be a good thing or a bad thing for women's coaching in general. It shouldn't. It's kind of hard to say in my mind, you know, is they're trying to make sure the team's going to be successful.
Right.
And if there weren't any women who wanted the job, you know, and Tom was the next best candidate, then that would be, you know, the place to go. There's been some outrage a little bit on our Facebook wall about how he kind of brought down the Matildas and created a lot of drama. I don't know anything about that really, but... Ooh. There was someone who was very passionate about it and said, you know, he wasn't very good for the Matildas in the first place.
Well, if that's one case, I mean, I guess we'll just have to see what happens there. In terms of the change in gender of coach, although that really isn't, it's always good to have women coaching women's teams because obviously the next generation sees that women can do these things, which is like... clear mostly to people, but it's always good to have that reinforcement. But if he really is the best person for the job, I guess to me it doesn't matter whether he's a man or woman. Soon Hodge was there for the last few years and she did an awesome job, and I think that there's representation on both sides, and hopefully he will be able to lead them drama free to several World Cup golds.
Yeah, I hope so. I don't I I wish now I had read about drama with the Matildas, because I was unaware of that. And that worries me a little bit, because I think one of the biggest strengths that the USWNT has had the past couple of years has been their chemistry as a team. You know, just looking back at where they were before the World Cup, where they almost didn't even qualify for the World Cup that they went on to almost win. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen them talk about how it was their chemistry that they had to work on. And you can see now on the sidelines and in interviews and everything that they have such great chemistry together and such great chemistry with their coach. I mean, she's over on the sideline dancing when things are going well, you know, and she mm-hmm. just really at ease with everyone around her, or seemed, I should say, past tense. And, you know, there's a lot of big personalities on that team, very different personalities. And for them to have good chemistry is no small feat, I think. I've been on, you know, we've all been on teams, right? And you know how big personalities can be a cancer. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if they work together, it can really be a powerful force. So drama worries me for sure. The gender thing, you know, it would be great to see a woman be the next coach. But I don't think that should give anyone an advantage over somebody else. I think it has to be about competency and willingness to take on the job. I mean, it seems like there were a few women's names in the mix and they took their own name out of contention. So what can you do? Yeah. I don't think the decision should be made. You shouldn't just have to find a female coach and just search until you can't search anymore, because you can just get yourself into trouble there. And the bottom line is we need the best coach possible. So
it is interesting that all those women did pull their names out, or even on the first podcast when we laid out all of the possible coaches, even some of them, when they were being mentioned as possibilities, said that they weren't interested. So the question is, why were they, what is it that they didn't want to become involved in the coaching level?
Well, I mean, Hope Solo, no offense, but as a coach, I mean, that's kind of a big personality to take on, and trying to do that dynamic and learning that dynamic within the team. And also on, you know, you have to improve, and they just won a gold medal. So, you know, I would say, you know, if you start doing bad, you're going to be, you know, doing, people are going to you're going to be blamed easily. You know, and there's going to be some new players here too coming up through the system. I mean, it's not going to be, you're going to have to start trying to integrate those new players into the players that have won all these medals.
Yeah, we're looking at kind of a generation transition here.
But that alone could call for a loss, you know what I mean? And maybe that's what was frightening about taking this position in the first place. But anytime every season is different, you know? I think most fans, although they hope that they win every time, you can look at it and say, yeah, there's a bunch of new people. It isn't the same chemistry as last time. Things are not going to be like it was last year. So I don't know. I think, although that's a legitimate reason why they wouldn't want to, I think that is, to me, that's odd, because every season is different. You get a whole new people. That chemistry is different. That you can't control that.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll just have to see on that end. Hopefully the fact that we haven't heard too much about the drama on the Australian team makes it like one of those kind of like a one incident type deal, and that it's not going to spread throughout our team, but I guess we shall see.
Yeah. And you know, it's an internet rumor on top of that. So who, you know, we had it on Facebook, but it's not exactly a legitimate source, but it was brought to my attention when I did post this article.
So if any of you guys know about this drama, please send us a message so we get all the details about it. Can either put it to rest or make us nervous about this new change.
And please try to keep the language clean.
Yeah, no F-bombs. Okay, what did you say, Anne?
Has that been an issue on Facebook or something?
We had one. But don't worry, it was handled. It was fine. Just watch the language, guys.
All right, so another thing taking issue with a women's sports event or sport is the possibility that the rim is going to be lowered in women's basketball. So the International Basketball Federation is considering lowering the rim for, I'm not really sure why. I think it sounded like it was more about drawing attention to the game to make it a little bit more attractive. That's what Secretary General of the FIBA said. I don't know how that would really make it more attractive, but what do you guys think?
Oh, I just love Gino Auriemma for the way he just comes out and says it like it is. Let me read you his quote.
Okay.
What makes fans not want to watch women's basketball is that some of the players can't shoot and they miss layups, and that forces the game to slow down. How to help improve that? Lower the rim from 10 feet. Do you think the average fan knows that the net is lower in women's volleyball than men's? It's about 7 inches shorter, so the women have the chance for the same kind of success at the net as the men. Let's say the average men's player is 6'5", and the average woman is 5'11". Let's lower the rim 7 inches. Let's say 7.2 to honor Title IX, instituted in 1972. If you lower it, the average fan likely wouldn't even notice. Now there would be fewer missed layups because the players are actually at the rim when they shoot. Shooting percentages go up. There would be more tip-ins. Now, the problem I see with lowering it is that there's going to be all this ha-ha jokes and negative commentation with the fact that we had to lower the rim for the poor little women who couldn't handle a 10-foot rim. But in reality, this is not a new concept. It probably should have been lower from the beginning, but just wasn't, because that would have involved people replacing rims that with ones that were adjustable in courts all over the country and world so that women could use them. And Steph and I have some personal experience with this, because that's exactly why the steeplechase water pit is 12 feet, which is as long as the men's, even though our barriers are 6 inches shorter, which by the way makes it harder for us to jump as far out into the water because we're starting from a lower height. It's because it was either deal with that or wait for everybody to change their tracks to have adjustable water pits, which was going to take a while and maybe never happen. But our barriers are 6 inches lower than the men's, as are the women's hurdles in all the hurdling events in track and field. And like Gino said, in football, the net is lower. And it's not lower because women are inferior or weaker or whatever. It's simply based on average height, you know? And when you watch, like, so when I have gotten into basketball, it's been fairly recently, and it's been in women's college basketball. So that's what I've watched more than anything else. And so when I catch an NBA game on, you know, on the off chance I turn on the TV and it's there, or I'm at a restaurant and they're playing it, I'm just like, oh my gosh, they look like a bunch of giants. It takes them like 4 steps to get down the court. They can hit by getting on their tiptoes practically. I mean, it looks ridiculous. So I can imagine coming from the place where most people are coming from, where all they've watched is men's basketball. And then they come and they watch women and they're like, what the heck? You know, they can't, takes them forever to get down the court. You know, they don't make layups as easily. They don't dunk ever. If they dunk, it's a big deal, you know? And so I see where that connotation comes from, and how if you're used to a certain level of play and you come watch the women, it seems inferior. And, you know, in my opinion, the men's rim should be raised because it's way too easy for them to do what they do. It's way too easy. But, you know, either way, I think there's an argument for doing this because it would make the game more exciting. And I think Gino is right that the average fan wouldn't even notice. If we just did it, an average fan's not going to know whether it's in the news or not. They're not going to hear about it because, you know, it's not going to get necessarily mainstream attention. And then they happen to turn on a women's game and they see more layups getting made and more dunks being made. And they're going to think, wow, this is kind of cool. Whereas I feel like a lot of people say, oh my gosh, have you ever watched women's basketball? Oh, yeah. They can do this. They can't even do that. And it has nothing to do with the women can't this or can't that. It's just it's a more difficult game for them because of their average height.
Yeah, it's even been made fun of on Family Guy, sadly, about women's basketball being low scoring and not as fast.
Yeah. Well, there was one. I'm guessing she was a WNBA player, but she was saying that she was arguing against lowering the rim, saying that the game you should concentrate more on, I think like defense. And that it would be kind of cheap to do that, because then you're in enforcing or like allowing all of these dunks to happen, which wouldn't happen in the normal game. And that's the question. Do women want to play like men, or do they want to play their own game, focus on the things that like defense and passing and outside shots, or do they want it to be more like men? Is the men like the standard of what is good basketball? And that's the question. I mean,
On the women's soccer side, it's weird to kind of compare this, but, you know, it used to be, you know, especially, you know, you watch the Premier League and then you watch women's soccer, and it's two different kind of techniques going into it. It's two different, you know, the Premier League tends to be a little bit more flamboyant, whereas women's game isn't as flamboyant. There's not as many like crazy bicycle kicks. There's not stuff like that. But at the same time, they still make it their own. They make it the way they want. But it does play to the strengths of the women. But you just kind of have to think about it that way, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if they change the rim, I wouldn't like be huffy about it in any way, but it's just, I think that they do have, they are playing the game successfully. And I know that they have a smaller ball, which is something that they've mentioned, that there's like other adjustments within the game. But, and I would hope that media wouldn't like play on this and make it a huge story. I kind of feel like they would talk about it. It would be a joke for a little bit, and then people would forget. But then you also have to think about making the adjustment to all of these courts. So, and they want to do this in just a few countries. So they will change their court, but whoever plays that team will be playing on two different style courts until they can decide what they're going to do. So you kind of, I mean, which is a little unfair. How can you compare two different games because they're like testing this out? So it's like either make adjustable hoops for every, like make all hoops adjustable so that they can lower them all for one season, try it out, decide what they're going to do. But it seems like a financial investment too, which I don't think they can really do right now. But I don't know. I'm not their treasurer.
I mean, I would see the best scenario being if they were going to try this, to do it in the WNBA first.
Right. That'd be good.
It's certainly, I would guess that their basketballs are already adjustable. And, you know, the WNBA basketball is smaller than the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller. The three-point line is slightly closer to the basket than the men's. So really, why isn't the rim a little lower? And we're not talking about a foot, you know? And I could just see, you know, really, I think it's less about playing like the men than it is just, you know, really playing like the men is playing with all of their dimensions and all of their sizes, you know?
Yeah.
I think changing the rules like this and trying things is something that men's professional leagues, basketball and otherwise, have done on their way to being viable and successful and marketable. So while I, like in my heart, I'm always on the side of keeping things, you know, pure, you know, like let's not make things easier, let's keep it the same way,
mm-hmm.
et cetera. In terms of marketability and reaching a wider audience, those are the kind of things historically that have worked to make the league and the sport more mainstream.
Yeah, I guess that's true, because they didn't have the three-point line forever, and then mm-hmm. in order to get higher scoring games, they, you know, entered that into the game. Mm-hmm. I guess it would be interesting to see how it works, because I think the way men's basketball is accepted within culture is much different than how women's is. So I'm not sure that doing that, we're going to get the same kind of response. Although I'm sure there were a bunch of people upset about entering, you know, the 3-point line in the men's game. But yeah. I mean, it might not be a media thing. It really could just blow over really quickly and people will probably forget about it fast. So
yeah,
I don't know what the FIBA has planned, but we shall see.
We shall.
But I think we'll all be supportive of whatever they decide to do.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because, you know, I'm kind of from Anne's point of view too. When I do watch basketball, I tend to watch women's basketball. So it's a little bit of a weird thing to sometimes watch men's basketball, but it's really about trying to get people to appreciate the women's game. And if lowering the rim, you know, gets more people watching, that's a good thing.
That is true. All right. So let's talk about something a little more happy. We forgot the top 10 things last time. We're really sorry, fans. But this time we're coming at you with a really stellar one. Kara, why don't you tell us about it?
So we're going to, since, you know, we're right before Thanksgiving, we're just going to say the top 10 things that we're thankful for in any, many ways. And I'll just go ahead and start off. I'm very thankful that we have more women in the House and the Senate this time around on the election. Not trying to play into the politics, but it's always nice to try to get even equal representation to the population into both of those places.
All right, Anne, you have number 9.
Yeah, I am thankful for kids soccer. I've seen Jalen to Saturday morning soccer for 2.5 to 3.5 year olds the past couple weeks, and it is the cure for what ails you. It is. I love seeing her and the other little girls during red light, green light, kick everybody's butt and having a great time. And it's my daily pick me up, or my weekly pick me up.
The future soccer stars of America, everyone. I'll hit you with number 8, which is I am thankful for the health of my family, especially my mama, who is cancer free.
Yeah.
And to everyone else who is dealing with cancer, push through. There's always something to be thankful for.
Agreed. So we're on what, number 7?
Yes.
Yes. So I am very thankful for turkey trots because that allows me to eat as much as I possibly want to on Thanksgiving.
Amen to that. Are both of you guys running in a turkey trot?
Not this year. Having to fly home the night before Thanksgiving due to my brand new job. So it'll be interesting to see how this year goes.
Less turkey, apparently.
Yeah, yeah, probably.
I am undecided.
Ooh, Anne, are you feeling a little nervous about jumping in a race?
No, what do you mean?
I have not found one, but I am slightly nervous about jumping in a 5K. The last time I ran, two men paced me, and I won it, like, by default, not legitimately. But I can only go down from there, so I'm a little nervous.
Didn't legitimately win?
What's that?
Didn't legitimately win?
I did legitimately win, but they kind of let me win. So, but everyone else, all the fans, they were like so surprised that a woman won. They had no idea that the guys dropped out so that I could win. But it was a good time.
Chivalry is alive.
Yes, at least on cross country courses. Okay, Anne, you're up 6.
I am thankful for Twitter, especially during political debates. I got a big kick out of all the Big Bird jokes after that comment. The binders full of women stuff had me. I mean, it seems like after every debate, there was something that popped up. And then after the election night was over, all the jokes about particularly Todd Akin defeating Claire McCaskill in Missouri, who Todd Akin was famous for his quote that if you get legitimately raped, your body has a whole way to shut that thing down so you can't get pregnant. So,
who would have thought we had such superpowers? We should be utilizing this more often.
The jokes that came out of that just had me rolling. So I'm thankful for Twitter, especially during political debates, to kind of lighten the mood.
Awesome. I am thankful for the great running weather because it makes me miss cross country, which is really hard to do. And hopefully it'll get me out the door for a turkey trot this year.
So I'm very thankful for all the NCAA sports that are about to start to happen. All the championships. Got cross country coming up here soon, and soccer has already begun. And it's just the best time of the year.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely. Speaking of NCAA sports, I am thankful for NCAA football. Yesterday was an amazing day to watch games, a lot of overtimes, lots of close ones. And I'm hopeful the fact that by the time that little 9-year-old girl whose video has gone viral this week of her just whooping up on everybody on the football field. I hope that by the time she's in college, she can play on a women's football team at the NCAA level.
Yes, we hope that for her too. That's awesome. Some of my professors are even talking about her. She is just blown up, which is cool.
Yeah, very cool.
Number two. This is kind of like Anne's Twitter thing, but I'm thankful for social media so that we can communicate with all of you fellow women's sports fans.
Yeah.
I guess I get the last thankful.
You do.
Okay. Ooh, this is tough. Well, let's just say I'm very thankful to be doing this podcast today. I enjoy talking to other people who love sports just as much as I do and don't think I'm crazy for following cross country all day and keeping it updated in every other sport.
Well, we are thankful that you did that, so you can give us the lowdown on the Women Talk Running podcast later today.
Be proud to be crazy.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you, the Women Talk Sports shirt with this is what female athletes look like. That shirt's been worn out this week.
Yeah. I'm wearing mine right now. How ironic is this? Or coincidental, I guess. Awesome.
Get in the spirit.
I had to. All right. Well, this wraps up the fourth edition of the newly minted Women Talk Sports podcast. Thank you, Anne, for joining us and giving us some MMA schooling. We'll bring you back on here once we figure out how this whole thing unfolds. And you can follow Kara and I onto the next podcast, the Women Talk Running podcast. Feel free to email us at podcast@womentalksports.com if you think we should talk about something that we haven't, or you have a comment about stuff we've already talked about.
Or even if you want to advertise with us, we'll do that too.
Oh, yeah.
Is it singular@womentalksports.com or podcast plural?
I think it's podcast, not plural.
Okay. Clarifying, everybody.
No, that's good. And you can follow me on Twitter at Steph M. Pearl, P-E-R-L, and Kara.
You can definitely follow me at Women Talk Sports. Also, I'm on the Facebook page actively. And if you just kind of want to follow me through my everyday life, I am at Kara Byrd, C-A-R-A-B-Y-R-D.
And I am at Angaff, A-N-N-G-A-F-F.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening to the podcast, and we'll be back at you next month.
See ya. Have a happy Thanksgiving.
I'll run some turkey trots.